Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, no plan at all. It's just whenever I finish the book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed. And the book that I'm going to be reviewing today is kind of special for me in that this, I think, is probably the first book that I've ever finished reading, or listening to the audiobook in this case, and then immediately just gone straight back to the start and started listening to it over again. It's called The Riddle Master of Head, which is Riddle Master Number 1 by Patricia A. McKillop. And I'd seen this book before mentioned because, like, The Riddle Master of Head is kind of like a pretty good title. It kind of catches the eye a bit, but I never really thought of reading it because for me it just sits in one of those 1970s fantasy book series which doesn't really have anything going for it. Or I guess I just didn't know about it until a few people in the on the SFBRP Goodreads group posted in the thread, books I would like to see reviews. Someone said, how about The Riddle Master of Head or The Riddle Master series? And somebody else said, yeah, I enjoyed that series as well. And that's enough for me to download a book, especially if it's available and audible. And especially if it's like 5 to 10 hours long, I will give it a go straight away. And so that's what I did. And I was looking for an audiobook to get into because what always happens when me and Juliana decide to read a book at the same time is that I start it and get most of the way through or finish it off, and then she's like, yeah, I'm about 10% of the way into it. So what I needed to do, should always happen, is that she should finish the book or to get within like 2 chapters of the end, and then I should start it, because when it comes to these English science fiction books, we get through them at very, very different paces. So in this case, I was looking for another book to start instead of continuing on with Down Below Station. And I picked out The Riddle Master of Head based on, these recommendations from SFBRP listeners. And it started off, and I was like, all right, this seems pretty standard stuff. And to be honest, I don't think there's anything massively out of the ordinary about this book written as a fantasy book in the 1970s. It's, quite a few of the little themes and tropes will be very, very familiar. Like, okay, there's this guy who's like a chosen one, and he's even got some scars on his forehead. In this case, not a lightning bolt, he's got like stars on his foreheads, but he doesn't understand that there's prophecies about him, or doesn't want to acknowledge them, and he's a very reluctant hero, a bit like it felt a bit more like Frodo or Bilbo Baggins, who was sort of like, no, I'm kind of comfortable over here in my little rural town. He's the Prince of Head, and he's like, no, I'm good over here. And it's all like, nope, but you're going to be on a journey. So he goes off on a reluctant journey and meets people on the way. There's wizards and all that kind of stuff. But when I was reading it, I was like, oh, this is actually very, very well written. It all starts off in this land. There's these like three continents or three areas of a continent. Of course, this is the audiobook. I don't have the map at the start, which I'm sure there'll be a map at the start of the ebook or the paperback version of this or the paper version of this book. I don't have that. So there's these three places and you can get between them by sea or by going over mountains and things like that. And these three lands, the wizards disappeared about 700 years ago. Nobody really knows quite what happened to them or what was going on there, but some people are still alive since then because they're otherwise like non-wizard but still magical people, or they're sons of wizards or, you know, relations of wizards, and they have that long-lived gene and are still around. And this Head, which is the Riddle Master of Head, is a rural, very rural island out of the way, and it's so important that nobody has ever even bothered invading it. It's sort of like, yeah, they'll keep just producing, they'll keep producing wheat and beer and sending over cart horses. That's pretty much what that land is good for. At one point, someone says, you can't be special. I never thought you'd be special. You're from Head, that most unimaginative of lands. So we're introduced to our hero. His name is Morgan, and when we're first introduced, you don't realize he's a prince because he's like just having a fight with his brother in the mud, and one of his closest friends, or one of his only mentioned friends, is his pig herder. The pig herder that he's missing comes up quite a few times. Like, I should be at home, entertaining my pig herder back in my farm back home. And the way that he knows he's the prince, or the way that we know he's the prince, is because this form of magic called the land rule. And if you have the land rule, you kind of magically know what is good for your people and what they need or what the land needs. And at the start he's saying like, okay, when the traders come over from the mainland, I'm the one who deals with everything. Because I have the land rule, I'm going to get the best things, I'm going to sell the best things, I'm going to do the best deals for all of the people who are living on my land and what's best for my land. But we discover right at the start, not really a spoiler, but we discover right at the start that he has a crown under his bed, and his brother's going, wait, what's this crown that you have under the bed? Like, and he's sort of like, where did you get this crown? We're princes. We don't have crowns, you know? The prince's parents died, you know, like a few years back by drowning at sea, but... he's got this crown under his bed, and his brother's going, we don't have crowns in this place. And we find out that the crown is the crown that belonged to the ghost of a king in a different land who had this tower. And if you go into this tower and challenge the king to a riddle battle, a battle of wits of riddles, you win the crown. And if you fail, you die. And we find out later there's another prize attached to winning the crown too. But Morgan didn't know that going in. He discovers that a bit later. So Morgan has trained in this college. He's sort of like this country boy who went to this college and was very good and was, you know, known to be very, very good at the riddles and knew what he was doing, so much so that he became one of the quickest people to ever graduate up through the different levels. There's different levels of cloaks or something. You get a red cloak and then a blue cloak and then a grey cloak and then a black cloak. The colours might be out of order, but he didn't want to get the black cloak and become like a professor, because that was the only thing that you can do when you get to that level. So he left before he got the black cloak, but we discover that he went on this mission to win this crown, and it seems like he had no motivation for it. Or, you know, he talks about his motivation, or he's asked by an old friend, like, why did you do this? What did you, you know, why did you go there and do all of this kind of stuff? But even though he has motivations and he talks about his motivations, we kind of understand as readers that maybe that he isn't completely in control of his motivations, or his, you know, his motivations aren't the only thing that guide him, and there's something else guiding his actions and forcing him to take these different routes through life. And maybe that's got something to do with his place as the guy, as the prophesied person with three stars on his head. A little bit about the riddles before I continue on this review, that I made a note here, that I thought that I was going to get something like Bilbo and Gollum in the caves in The Hobbit, and it's sort of like, what is this thing? Oh, it's a fish. What is this thing? Oh, it's you know, a piece of string, or is that a different thing? You know, and all these different little riddles that we'd get, and as a reader we could puzzle through these riddles at the same time. However, that's not really what the riddles are in this book. It turns out that the riddles are more like sayings or little bits of fact or little history, pieces of history with lessons attached. So the way that you do a riddle battle is you say this little fact from history or this saying, and then the person would say back to you the lesson which is attached to that. And so it turns out that the riddle battles is just who knows most about history, who knows most about the magic which is no longer there. You know, 700 years ago all of this knowledge disappeared, and now the riddles are kind of like the leftover, you know, leftover facts, leftover knowledge of the wizards, leftover bits of magic, but also just a lot of history as well, sort of like, what was this thing here? So these, we're told more about these riddle battles. I don't think we ever actually see any riddle battles, or riddle contests, or whatever they're called, but we hear about them, people saying, oh, this one lasted 3 days, and the person, you know, all he needed at the end was a, you know, drink of water, or he just wanted to collapse at the end and things. So we learn about these, but it seems like that Morgan, being a riddle master, isn't just someone who, you know, is very good at knowing riddles or figuring them out. It's more like he has an extensive knowledge of the history of those places, and it definitely felt like there was a lot of history in these places. And as the book progresses, you know, you visit this place and meet this interesting character, visit this place and visit this interesting character. And it's kind of a bit episodic with the, you know, the travels in between breaking up the interesting encounters. And in that way, it felt very much like these, you know, other classic fantasy books and series. It felt a bit like The Dying Earth, even though there's not one character in The Dying Earth book. There's sort of like different things. But you go here and have an adventure there, meet that thing, move on. And very much like The Wizard of Earthsea in that way. You know, you go here, meet an interesting character, have an encounter, maybe have a fight or there's something goes on, and then on to the next place. And as he goes different places, sometimes Morgan knows what's there and catches up with old friends or meets other people, And otherwise, he meets new people, but it's often people he knows about because he's a riddle master. He's sort of like, oh, yeah, I think I know about this person, this person. So this book is about, like, the revelation of Morgan and the prophecy about him and him being very, very reluctant. In fact, all the time he's like, oh, I think I'm going to go home. And then for some reason he just goes in a different direction and is asked, why did you come here? He's sort of like, well, I was going to go home, but then I thought I'd come over here. Maybe it was a bit dangerous to go across the sea. You know, my parents died at sea and I've been attacked at sea, and it seems like there's some shape changers who all come from the sea. It's not always entirely sure what's going on there. But all the time he's heading towards Erlenstar Mountain, which is to meet the High One, and he's going to get all his questions answered along the way. Now, in a lot of these fantasy stories, there'll be like a person and he's a chosen one, and he gets all these hangers on, and he's joined by a wizard and joined by a dwarf and joined by a healer and joined by a fighter. In this case, he mostly goes on by himself. If anyone meets up with him, they normally stay with him for like one bit of a journey and then falls alongside the wayside, not dies or something, but he leaves them behind and goes in a different direction. His most common companion though is a harpist called Death, and it was always fun to listen to this because it was always like, oh, he was talking to Death and Death said this, and I looked it up on Goodreads when I just checked it out. The blurb on Goodreads, beside him went Death, the High One's harper, and Death is spelt D-E-T-H, not D-E-A-T-H, but it is fun to be always be accompanied by Death. And he says, oh yes, my father always said that Death played harp at his wedding. And I quite enjoy the ambiguity of this relationship between Morgan and Death, the harpist, because they both play harp, and you're like, are these guys rivals, or is Death a good person or a bad person? Is he being manipulated by Death or not being Death? So all of this was happening throughout the book, and what else have I got some here? I got to the end, and there was a bit of a twist at the end, and I was like, oh, this person, we knew this person was the same person as that person, but then there's this other person who is also the same person as this other person, and I was like, well, who were they again? And I was like, did I miss that? Or is this more important than I thought? I wasn't quite sure. Like, I was like, oh, this person, I know this person was definitely mentioned at the start of the book, but what about this person? How do we know this? So I thought, well, tell you what, that's all, a lot of that is set up in the first two chapters of the book, so I'll just start listening again and make sure that I didn't miss anything. And of course it turns out that I missed loads of stuff, which you only get on a second read-through, because this book is so rich in detail, and there's so much history that as they mention this thing, they're like, oh, this thing, wizards, whatever, like that. And at the start of the first reading of the book, I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess that might be important. But you can't hold all the history, you can't hold all the world-building. And so just reading, like literally getting to the end of the book and just going straight back to the start and reading it again through, or listening to it again through, I picked up so much more stuff. And because I wasn't trying to work out, oh, who's this character again? Oh, I'm not quite sure. Where are they going again? All of the different kind of things. I could just, concentrate and just relax into the writing. And the writing is really, really great. And the world building is really, really great. It's all poetic and based on the different imagery of nature and things. And it just made me realize that, like, in this book, Morgan gets injured a lot, and he's stung by magic a lot. But also some of my favorite parts is where he learns magic. Of course, you understand that he's got some, special abilities, and there's a prophecy about him, so he's probably going to be talented in this way. But this was some of my favorite parts of the book, where he was like, okay, I'm going to learn magic this way and learn magic that way. Now, in most fantasy books that I read these days, especially these modern fantasies book, it's all about the magic system. And when someone learns magic, they're not learning... like, how to do something, they're learning the rules about something. And this annoys me no end, is that people think that because there's a magic system, when someone learns magic, they're learning a system, whereas that just isn't how it works. When you learn music, you're not, like, of course you learn the notes and you learn the structures and you learn the scales, but what you actually want to see at the end of it is somebody being, like, making magical music. I'm trying to say is that you just want the beauty of the music at the end. You don't want to spend, like, a lot of time with someone learning scales or learning, okay, this is where you put your fingers on the keyboard, and this is how you shape your mouth when you blow into this reed or into this trumpet. This is how you hold the violin, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, that's the system of music. But what we actually want is the outcome. We want to know what it feels like to play music and to experience music, and that there's a world filled with music in it. And you don't get that across by explaining what notes are and explaining what scales are and explaining what, oh, this is a chromatic thing and this is an interval and this is all of this kind of stuff. And all this different stuff which you learn, you know, learning music theory and getting your grade 5 music theory and then going all that kind of stuff. We don't care what level of grade a musician has got to. You know, we don't care if they're grade 5 music theory or grade 8 piano player. We want to listen to the beauty of their music. And this is what I feel is definitely in this book and definitely in a lot of older fantasy books, is that you get the beauty of the magic and you get the feeling of the magic and the vibe of the magic because they don't get overloaded with the idea of the magic system. It's like, I don't care about the scales, I don't care about what key this is, just give me the feeling of what it is like to be magic, or to do magic, or to see magic, or to have magic around, you know. And so that's what this book is. And it's not just that there's magic and it's, you know, written in magical ways and it's not written in magic system ways. It also, because a lot of the magic is based on nature, all of the imagery that's based on nature as well, at some points I was like, oh, okay, did somebody just turn into a bird? You know, the shapeshifters here. So you're like, oh, somebody could have turned into a bird, or they could have just, like, flown like a bird, as in, like, fly. Like, is when Gandalf says, fly, you fools, does he mean get onto the back of eagles and fly? Or does he mean, like, run? You know, you're like, in that case, okay, he was saying run, and, you know, all the theories about having to fly on eagles, whatever, like that kind of stuff. But in this case, in this book, I was like, oh, did somebody really, were they really made out of seaweed? Or did they just look like seaweedy-like? Or would they really turn into a bird? Or were they just bird-like? Or, you know, is this magic actually conjuring things from nature? Or is it just the use of words which makes things seem natural? And like I say, some of my favourite parts of this book was when he's learning this magic based on, of course, we already knew that he had the land ruler magic. But there's so many other forms of magic based on, you know, oh, this person's a ruler and he can change shape. He can change into a wolf, or he can change into an elk or a deer. I can't remember what they're. Vestas is what they're called in this book. Some, like, magical unicorn deer. So there's all of this stuff going on. And as he learns different kinds of magic and uses them in the world, again, some of my favourite parts, because the writing is so beautiful, because it isn't about, oh, to become a Vesta, to become an elk, a magical elk, you know, count up this amount of this and do this and then roll that dice and become here, and then now you have become, it's much more about, like, what it is to be a magical elk, what it is to feel like a deer, what it is to feel like a wolf, what it is to feel like, you know, all these different things, these different natural, like, all this nature magic thing going on. So, yeah, I don't know. A lot of really good stuff for me in this book, based on the writing not being about the system, the writing being about the actual magical feeling of this. Okay, what other notes do I have here? No, I think I'm all the way through my notes. This book did not have an ending, and I think that if I had, because at the moment I'm on a cruise to West Africa, I've just done the Gambia and Senegal and stuff like that. Not great internet in those places, and also on the ship, as you've probably heard me talking about in the past, satellite internet, which I pay for by the megabyte, and it's very slow and very expensive. I'm not going to start downloading new audiobooks, but I think if I had finished this book and immediately had the next book available, Riddle Master Book 2, whatever that book is, if I suddenly had that available to me, I would have just downloaded it probably straight away and started listening to it. But because I didn't have that, but I still wanted more of this world to work out what was going on and to get clear what was going on, I immediately went back to the start and listened to it again. And because it's a 7-hour audiobook, and because if you listen at 1.25 speed, because I've listened to it again, I can get through it a little bit more quickly. I don't have to worry about, you know, catching every single word and things. You can get through it pretty quickly. But because of that, I listened to it again. I really enjoyed that second listen. But if I'd have got the second book, I'd probably have just gone straight to the second book. But now I'm really glad that I went back and listened to this book twice within the space of about a week and a half or whatever it was. Another reason is because the other audiobook that I have to go is another fantasy book. And I thought, well, Before I review this book, I don't want to start another fantasy book, because then two fantasy books, both written in the 1970s by women, it might not be might not be the best thing to keep everything clear in my head. So that's why I went back to the first book. But again, it was such a refreshing experience just going, I finished a book. Let's just start it over again. And I don't remember. Maybe if people know this podcast more than me or have listened to episodes more recently, have I done that before on the Science Fiction Book Review podcast? I'm not sure I have. I mean, of course, I've read books more than once and reviewed them twice on the podcast before, but I'm not sure if I've just finished a book and just gone straight back to the start and read it again. One thing that I do have to say about this book is because it was written in the 1970s, it is, like I say, a lot of those tropes are in place that you expect, you know, that it's not groundbreaking in a way, except maybe for the ending, actually. But there's a few groundbreaking things which kind of break the mold of, you know, the traditional fantasy tropes. But I don't think it's so much about how it breaks the rules or is going off into new ground. It is very much sort of like, okay, we have this framework. This character has to go from here to here to here, learn these things along the way, have magical experiences, and end up where he ends up at the end of this book, which is great. Again, a bit of a cliffhanger, and I would have gone straight into the next book. One thing that I did notice is that even though it's written by a woman, it is very male-heavy. It is very much about, okay, here is a society run by men who keep knowledge locked away in the ivory tower, available to men. A woman is a prize. This other woman is the most beautiful woman in all the land. They never say, this man is the most handsome man in all the world. It's like the men are the most intelligent men. The men are the cleverest men. The men are the most, you know, powerful leaders. And the only women who are mentioned are like, she was beautiful, or she was the second most beautiful. Yeah, I think it's quite funny. It's sort of like, yes, I'm destined to marry the second most beautiful woman in all three lands. But yes, it is very male-heavy, and even when there's a minor character, it's sort of like, and this character is a young boy. You know, there's no young women who are good or important in any way, and there's no... there are a few wives in the background and a few women who just come in and now and then, but yes, it's a very male-heavy book. And especially as I was doing before, I was reading a lot of more modern fantasy and a lot more modern science fiction where... I don't know, it's just very noticeable when you go back to a book from the 1970s and it's just straight back to that old, this old system of writing where it's men are the only ones who can do anything important. Maybe the later books pick up in a bit different way and we get a bit more women involved in the story. But again, even books written by women seem to follow the formula that the men are the important characters. And if a man is mopey and doesn't want to do anything, is unmotivated, that's kind of like a, you know, showing him down to earth. But I'm sure a woman in the same situation was like, I just want to go home and become a housewife or whatever. Like this guy is like, I just want to go home and become a farmer and look after my little island of head. I don't know. I'm sure there'd be a different reaction, especially in the 1970s, for a woman to be the main character with all the same character traits and all doing all the same kind of stuff. So that was just a little interesting observation of looking back at 1970s fantasy. I guess that's my review. I just want to say I listened to this as an audiobook. It is narrated by, read by Simon Preble. Not quite sure how to pronounce that. He did a pretty good job. Again, I don't really have anything nothing to say. It was great how he said this and great how he read that or something. Just very competent reading. If you want this audiobook for free, you can go over to audibletrial.com/SFBRP. And in doing that, you help support the podcast. You get a book for free if you sign up for one of their Audible subscription trials. I do have a platinum plan, which means I get two audiobooks every month, which I listen to and enjoy. But again, I listen to quite a lot of audio, so if you don't think you can do that, you can just get a normal gold plan, which is one audiobook per month. And it works out pretty well. You know, when I start buying ebooks, which the next book I review was an ebook, I bought that and I was like, it feels quite expensive because even though you're getting audiobooks for like 1 credit or 2 credits or whatever it is, it actually works out that you're not paying any more for an audiobook when you get 1 credit per month or 2 credits per month than you do just by getting ebooks of new books or old books from Amazon. On the Kindle or whatever. So it's still a good deal. So I suggest check out audibletrial.com/SFBRP for that. Which brings me to, I guess, the end of the review. I rate this book 4 stars. Again, it could have been a 5-star book But again, a little few issues with pacing, and not everything is clear. And like I say, it is a very well-trodden story and well-trodden tropes, but the writing really engaged me. And the world-building was so great that, again, just to make sure that I had it all clear and to make sure that everything, you know, that I wasn't missing something and there was wasn't lots of important stuff happening in the background which I wasn't picking up on, I immediately went back through and listened to it again. And I must admit, there was a bit that I was missing, but I still think it gave me enough on one read-through that I would have enjoyed it. But again, the second read-through, like, just to clarify, just to make it all clear, to understand really what's going on with the history and the magic, which are the same thing. The history is the magic. The world-building is the magic. The character and the prophecy is the magic and is the world-building. It's so well wrapped up. And the riddles are the key to it, sort of like these unknown, unanswered riddles. And they're very dangerous because it means that the history isn't set and the story isn't set and the world isn't set and the magic isn't set when one of these riddles isn't known and there's no answer to it. All of that kind of stuff I really enjoyed again on the second read-through. Or the second listen, in this case, because it was an audio book. So, 4 stars for this book. The next book that I'm getting to, it will be Marooned in Real Time by Verna Vinge, which is a follow-up to one of the first highly rated books. I think I gave the first book in that series, The Peace War, like 4.5 stars or something early on in the podcast. I finally just got around to, like, I was realizing the follow-up book is never going to be on Audible, it seems. So I just got the ebook of that one, and I'm thoroughly enjoying that one too. So look out for that review coming probably at the same time as this one, because I won't be uploading this episode for 3 days, and I'll certainly have finished that next book and reviewed it within 3 days. You can check me out on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge on Twitter. On Instagram, I'm at Luke Burridge on Instagram. Also over on YouTube, you can check out my juggling videos and vlogging that I do. If you're interested in what I got up to in the Gambia and in Dakar and Senegal and follow along with my travel adventures, you can check that out on YouTube. Go to youtube.com/Luke Burridge. Otherwise, go over to sfbrp.com and check out the episode lists. There's a whole page there, which is every single episode in order, in reverse order. You can sort it all by books, series. You can sort by author. You can sort by length of the podcast. You can sort by the rating. And there's links to all of the original podcasts and downloads and all that kind of stuff. So check out the episode lists page over at sfbrp.com. I think that's everything. Also, yeah, if you want me to read a book, one of the best ways to do it is to go over to Goodreads, join the SFBRP listener group, become my friend on there, and then just go into the books I'd like to see review thread. And if you recommend a book and somebody else says, yeah, I think that'll be good, I'll probably get to it almost straight away, because I'm always looking for new books to read. So that's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.